Hello, I'm Kenji Lane Bowie, Spokane Region Field Director at League of Education Voters and lifelong Spokane resident. In this podcast, we interview students, policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Today, we're talking with a few members from AIR, the Alliance of Innovative Educational Redesign, to learn about their work in the community and the School Choice Fair taking place on January 18th. I've got three AIR members with us today, Mike, Charlie, and Eric. I'm going to start by having them introduce themselves. Mike, do you want to kick us off?
Happy to, Kenji, and thank you very, very much for having us today. We've been looking forward to this. My name is Mike Poutiatin. I'm currently the president of AIR, again, the Alliance for Innovative Educational Redesign. It's easier just to say AIR. And we're happy to be here and talk a little bit about who AIR is and what we do.
Charlie, do you want to introduce for us?
Sure. Charlie Wolf. I think I'm the secretary officially of AIR right now. Advocate, parent of a number of students in the system, and eager to play a role in helping to shape what our education system looks like. That's kind of my involvement.
Thanks, Charlie. And last but definitely not least, Eric, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks again, Kenji, for having us today. My name is Eric Knurison. I'm a principal of a small choice public school in West Valley School District called Spokane Valley High School. And I'm passionate about project-based learning and relationship-centered learning and just trying to create a different system that honors our kids' skills and gets them headed in the direction that's going to fill their cup.
I'm really excited to have you three here today to talk about what AIR is. I've been working with you all for the last year or so, learning more and more every day, and excited about the school of choice here. But before we get there, Mike, do you want to tell us a little bit more about what is AIR? What's the goal? How long has it been operating in the area and all that good stuff?
I'd be happy to, Kenji. Thank you very much. AIR, as I said, the Alliance for Innovative Educational Redesign, is a small nonprofit. And our sole goal is networking. We started about 10 years ago, and the way it started was I had a small coffee group that would get together once a month or so and just talk education. Group of folks who've been involved in education in many different ways in our region for a long time. And we were all very interested in rethinking school, in looking at sort of new models, new ideas. How could we do school differently? And also, how could we highlight the things that are going well in our school districts and schools regionally? And so we started just talking, meeting regularly and talking about what we were seeing and the people we were engaging with and that kind of thing. And two sort of themes came out of those early discussions, one of which was, wow, I've always wanted to go see that school out there. Oh my God, I hear this guy Eric is doing some really cool stuff out in Spokane Valley. I wish we could go see him. And we talked about that for a while. And then also we had the experience of saying, you know, I was talking to a principal the other day who was telling me they're doing this brand new program that no one's ever done before. And they feel like they're swimming upstream and trying something new and getting great results. And they just feel like no one knows what they're doing. And we would have the experience of saying, well, you know, there's actually a school about 10 blocks from you doing the same thing. Did you know that? And of course, they say, oh, no, we had no idea. So what came of those two sort of drivers, those vectors, was that we were thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if there was an organization whose job it was just to network people doing great stuff in schools? You know, not necessarily does it have to be sort of alternative or cutting edge or anything else, but just things that are happening in schools that are interesting, people who are thinking in new ways and people who are really engaging with kids in ways that are uncommon and effective. So we, after talking about it for a little while, we decided to start a nonprofit. And I think Charlie was a founding member, and we got together and started this little nonprofit with the mission of simply networking people doing really cool things in schools together, getting them talking to one another, building the conversation, helping to build capacity in organizations and programs and teachers in order to offer kids something new and different and interesting in schools. So that was really our whole mission and how we started in terms of that. We've, as I said, we've been around about 10 years. We have a series of activities that meet this networking goal that we really try to push. The first one was this idea of visiting schools who are doing interesting things, just getting people from one school to another, or parents or kids looking at schools who are doing things in different ways. And we started to call those learning journeys. And we're now doing probably 6 or 8 learning journeys a year. So they're kind of like field trips. People sign up and say, God, I've always wanted to go see that school over there. Let's go check them out. And so, and we do, and we usually go for a couple of hours and then have a discussion about what we saw in a particular school or a particular program, or perhaps visiting particular educators who are doing interesting things. So that's it. We've partnered in the last couple of years with Whitworth's teacher education program. And so we definitely, almost every learning journey now includes at least some Whitworth pre-service or early service teachers who, again, are just looking for new things that are happening, trying to find out, you know, what's going on in our region in education. Where's the cutting edge stuff happening? So that's one thing we do is these learning journeys. Another is that a couple times a year, we'll show a film, we'll host a film screening and just have a discussion about it. And we have a wide range of different kinds of focuses, but they're always films that are provocative in terms of what's happening in schools. Films like a film called Most Likely to Succeed, which talks about a very innovative set of schools in California. Films like Paper Tigers, which talks about how do you apply ACEs for improving student mental health. Films like Beyond Measure, which talks a little bit about how do we think beyond testing and standards in schools. Also, we've been working the last couple of years with a film called Listen, which is about how do we create climates and cultures in schools that really support student mental health. And that's a particular issue of ours in the last couple of years has been how do we really help schools think more deeply and broadly about mental health of their students and faculty. That's another thing we do. Another one is we do town halls. About once a year, we'll do a town hall meeting of some kind. These usually bring in an organization that's doing interesting things, and we generate a community discussion around what those things are. Washington Charters came, was it either last year or 2 years ago, and talked a little bit about the charter school ecosystem in our state and particularly in our region and what's happening there. We also have had the State Board of Education on a couple of occasions come and talk about what they do and their goals and objectives for a particular legislative year or session. So we do these town hall meetings. Those usually happen during the summertime, usually they're pretty well attended. We do conversational events, sort of like what we're doing right now. For a while, we would have conversations where an AIR board member would just host a generative conversation around a particular topic, like innovation in schools, or like funding for creative projects, or things like, particularly during the pandemic, we did a number of them around what are really great schools doing during the COVID years of the COVID school. What did that look like for schools who are really thinking positively about it? So we do these conversational events, you know, regularly. Another one, which we've just started to work into, is helping schools and educators and programs fund the things that they're doing. We recognize that money is tight in schools all across the board, particularly if we're trying something brand new or interesting or innovative, to say, where can we help find funding for that. So helping schools look for that. So we do work along that line. And then podcast events like we're doing right now is another one that we just sort of engaged and love doing. Eric and Charlie, what did I miss?
Mike, I think you did a fantastic job. I don't know if you missed much. I think the other discussion we've had is a directory. So trying to be able to put and create more of a repository for some of these schools of education within our region onto a database or into the public domain. So if somebody new comes to the community and they're looking for some sort of resource and discussion around what schools offer, we try to create a directory for that. You know, a little like grade schools, but a little more grassroots and regionally focused. So something that might have less national connection and more regional feedback. And non-traditional, a little bit more non-traditional and not necessarily with the big box. So these might have the specialties that a Summit might have, or a community school, or Spokane Valley High. So voices from the local region. No, Mike, I think you did a great job. I think it's just advocacy for non-traditional education that may not get the same marketing dollars or resources that some of the more traditional routes get.
I'll tag in there maybe from a different approach, and I'll tell a couple little stories about how being connected, or how I got connected with AIR, and then what kinds of things AIR have done that have influenced our school. So that'll help you kind of hear about these big picture things, see how they translate into change for school. So one thing that kind of, I just went down memory lane for a minute as I was sharing all those different things, and I realized that my first connection to AIR was a former AIR board member, and that person said to me, "Hey, you're really passionate about project-based and change and all these things going on. You know, have you ever heard of this organization?" And I said, "No, I've never heard of that." He goes, "Why don't you come down to our meeting?" So I went down to visit this meeting, and here was this group of people, and they were all talking about the same kind of stuff that I am passionate about. I had no idea. I thought I was all alone on an island over here. And so sometimes I think it's really nice to connect with other people that are also trying to do, like Charlie said, kind of the non-traditional work. The word cutting edge is okay, but it isn't always cutting edge. It's just for pockets of kids that need other things besides what the traditional system has to offer. And I felt like when I was with all these other people and we were coming up with ideas together, and then all of a sudden I was energized by having people bounce ideas off of it. One of the first ideas I heard from that group was about this conference called Deeper Learning. So then I got a chance to go down to this Deeper Learning conference, and it's an incredible conference. Again, it's like the same tribe of people, but times about 100 or 1,000. And there's all these people there from all over the world doing this kind of work. And so I'd never heard of that conference. So I went down to the conference, and man, what an incredible conference. Ran into a guy down there named Ron Berger. He's written a couple of books. He runs the EL Learning organization, and they're doing some incredible equity work right now across the United States, forming all kinds of schools that are doing great work with kids and writing curriculum and all kinds of stuff there. And one of their foundations is CRU. And CRU is a model for how you might create school culture that is positive and supportive with kids. And our staff picked up on School CRU after going to that Deeper Learning Conference. And it's probably been the biggest change impactor in our school that I've seen in my 25 plus years in the business. And then Mike mentioned the film screening. So one of the films we watched was a film called Listen. And a couple of the teachers at my school that watched that film were pretty moved by his acronym and model for teaching kids active listening and making active listening a part of your climate and culture in your school. And so they picked up on that and started teaching that to students in the class. And then our students, in turn, went out to a local elementary school, and they had written children's books about this character, Oscar, that's the acronym for the active listening set of skills. They went out to these elementary schools and started teaching the younger students about active listening skills. So then last year at the Choice Fair, which we'll talk here about this year in just a minute, last year I had some students that had the opportunity to go there and present about why did they choose to go to a choice school, a non-traditional school. And to see them be able to get up in front of a group of people and talk passionately about the impact that our school has had in their lives was pretty amazing. So those are the stories that maybe help, you know, show how, you know, the kind of networking that Mike's talking about really does tie everybody together and tie all these initiatives together and help ultimately in the classroom with students and help change their lives.
Hey, Kenji, I wanted to throw one more thing in there to support what Charlie and Eric were saying. And that is that some folks, when they sort of read our mission or hear me talk about it, they make the assumption that we are anti-traditional schools, and we're not at all. That's not at all the case. We, as an organization, sort of hold the ethos that we have a lot of different kinds of kids in the world, and they need different kinds of schools. So it's not that necessarily we're trying to say, oh, we need to get rid of all of the traditional schools. No, what we need to do is have different kinds of programs and different kinds of schools for different kinds of kids, and recognize that amazing, innovative stuff to try to serve kids happens in traditional systems and also outside traditional systems in choice schools. And so the idea being that, we're about simply finding new and interesting and innovative things to serve a broader and broader and broader spectrum of students.
Yeah, I'd love to chime in on one more piece, and that was my involvement specifically. So Mike alluded to it. I'm a father of four, and I guess a product of parents that really tried to give me an opportunity to learn. And I was in the Central Valley School District at a younger age in elementary school, and I was an unruly elementary school student, and the teachers didn't know what to do with me or didn't have the capacity to manage me. And at the time, it was easily to look at medication or some other therapy. But I guess it while being a parent, it made me aware of the need for alternative types of education, and not necessarily medication, right? That it's about engaging with the student and creating engaged citizens, and that's about learning. And so, as a father, I was deeply focused on trying to find the right solutions for my kids, knowing that one, as Mike alluded, might be traditional, one might not be traditional, and trying to find, understand and do my part to learn what options were in our market so that I could be prepared for that and to be able to introduce them to my kids so that they could have choice, right? And be able to find what was the best school and style for them to be thriving in and becoming the best and most engaged citizens that we could find. So that's kind of my involvement with AIR from the beginning. Now I've got a fifth grader. So as Mike alluded, 10 years later, I've got a fifth grader, a second grader, and two pre-K. And so we're doing a great job with that.
You got to AIR and what AIR does. And I have a similar educational story. I was someone, I've always said I did high school really well. I went to a traditional big box school here in town, and looking back, played the game quite well. And my younger brother and my older siblings didn't play as well sometimes, right? And their educational experience and their social experience was harmed because of that. And we had the exact same educational experience, the same teachers, the same coaches, the same environment, and it wasn't serving us all equally. And so because of that, my mom is now a teacher at a choice school. And so Mike, what you said, it's not eliminating programs, it's adding to the list, right? It's giving more options so students and families can find what is best for them. And I think this is a really nice segue into this event that's coming up in January, the School Choice Fair. And Eric, I'd like to start with you, if you could talk a little bit about, what kind of students you get to see at your school and how do they find a choice school? Because not everybody knows that you can choose what schools you get to go to, right? So do you mind talking about that a little bit? And you mentioned last year you had some students who even got to present at this event.
You bet. Yeah, I think that creating awareness that choice schools exist and that kids do have a choice is a huge part of our mission to network not only with other educators interested in this work, but with parents, families. And we want them to know that there are choices destigmatize this word alternative in education. And a lot of times we've heard of alternative schools and people only think of them as a place for people when they have nowhere else to go, as opposed to an alternative, just to an alternative to the tradition. Here's a different model for a kid who's super creative, or a different model for a kid who's super active and physical, or whatever else, whatever other traits that kids need to really be able to realize their full potential. And so, yeah, I get a chance. I think one of my favorite things about being a principal is getting a chance to interview and meet students that come to our school and hear their story and hear about some of the previous experiences they've had with school, and then to observe and watch that student during the coming years as they start to become who they are, because they've actually been boxed up for a number of years. To watch a student who's not being themselves, that has really been kind of snuffed out and minimized, come to life and really shine is just the best part about being a principal. And handing them a diploma at the end of their 12th grade year is the ultimate experience. And the kinds of things I hear a lot, and I have lots of different, I really can't put the kids that come here into one box. So I'll tell you a couple of different stories about some different types of paths that lead students here. So we do have a few students that come straight here as ninth graders, because they've already discovered choice schools as middle school students. And so those students, some of them come out of our own school district from West Valley City School. There are students that come from East Valley, also has a couple of middle school programs. Central Valley has a middle school called Summit. There's some different programs out there that sometimes kids leave those programs, and maybe due to where their parent lives or something like that, or the family moves. They're looking for choice and specifically trying to find that because it was such a good fit at middle school for their kids. So, you know, a percentage of our students come straight here with that in mind. Then we have a group of students that typically we might meet them in eighth grade. So we might go over to a middle school and present what our school is about. We meet them. They learn about us. But the gravity to follow their peers to a traditional high school is incredibly strong. And so, you know, if any of you remember your own middle school to high school transition years, there is nothing scarier than going to high school. And I think when a student thinks that if I just stay with my peers, I'm going to survive this thing, there's a strong gravity that direction. And so a lot of times they'll meet us, they might believe that we're actually the right fit for them, but they follow their friends to high school. And then what inevitably most of us again have experienced is you get to high school, all of a sudden you're not with the same friends anymore anyway. Something happened between eighth and ninth grade or being in that transition where you aren't actually closely connected with that same peer group. And now you're a little bit lost and you're not the big high school and you don't feel like you're fitting in, or you don't have the belonging in the kinds of groups that are there already. And if you don't fit into those groups, that can be a pretty lonely place. And we get quite a few students that do that. They transition over to the high school, and sometimes it takes a year, sometimes it's only a semester that they are over there and they're realizing, man, I should have gone to that other school. I don't feel like I fit. So we pick up quite a few students that are in that boat. And then another group of students that, as you can imagine, in this period of time, mental health has always been an issue, I think. But I think it's become, one, more talked about now, which is a good thing, but also a little less stigmatized. Still stigmatized, but a little bit less. So we are starting to see that, hey, this is like physical health. People need attention. They need to address this. But also, I just think the COVID years really magnified any students that were already having some mental health struggles. When they became isolated during COVID, a lot of times those issues were magnified. And so I think we see a fair number of students that are struggling with anxiety, struggling with depression. And again, based on, you know, I can't even remember the last statistic I saw about adults in our society that are using medications for our anxiety and depression. It's an incredibly high number. Why would it be any different for adolescents that are going through these difficult times as well? So there's quite a few of those students that when they get to a larger traditional school, they're kind of in an anonymous place. It's pretty big. It's hard. They might have a good relationship with one teacher. A lot of times they don't have a good connection there and they start to get pretty lost. The grades might start to suffer. They might start having attendance problems because they're not connecting with anyone and they are struggling with anxiety and depression, and there really aren't a lot of services for them. And, you know, counselors are totally overworked and over caseloaded at high schools. There just are not the resources there for kids in this way. And so a lot of those students start trying to find something else, or their parents are desperately trying to find something else to try to help their kid re-engage. And so, you know, those are a few different stories. I have students that come here that are incredibly off the charts bright and they're bored, and they don't want to sit in a chair and listen. And and I'm not saying that all traditional classrooms are that way. I say it happens more in a traditional school, that there's still a very direct instruction method being used in many classrooms. For kids that are off the charts smart, they're just bored. So some of them are really looking to do things differently and have some challenge in terms of some more relevant experiences, project-based learning. And then we also have students that come that have different kinds of learning challenges and disabilities where, again, the older they get, the larger the school, the larger the class sizes, the more they're changing to different classes so they don't have one teacher to watch them under their wing. And as those students get older, they start to get less and less knowledgeable, continuous support from adults, and they really start to struggle. And so our environment is a smaller environment where teacher-student ratios are better. You, again, have that chance to build a relationship with your teachers. They can learn about what your assets are and really help you find the best way to shine and to learn and fall back in love with. So that's a little bit of a portrait of some of the different kinds of kids that land here. And so it's kind of fun because when you look out in a room and you see them all together, it kind of makes you crack up. It's not like, it's not a homogeneous group of people that you would necessarily expect to be laughing together or, you know, working on a project together. But when you look out and see that in our school, there's a high degree of belonging, a high degree of cooperation, collaboration happening, and kids that go, you know what, you're different than me. And I'm different than you, but hey, let's work together on this and figure this out. So, if that helps paint a little bit of a picture of our choice school, but also just in general, kind of what that pitch is, that probably serves a lot of different choice schools.
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric. Mike, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about who might be at the school choice fair. What types of programs or schools can people expect to be able to engage with?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, as we said, the AIR tries to just network. Our goal is simply networking. And so the Choice Fair is an idea that came up a couple of years ago. And last year, I think it was last year, our first one, Eric, I think it was. And the idea was simply to showcase what those options are, showcase choice schools. Because, you know, AIR would get phone calls and emails occasionally with people just saying, you know, the traditional high school is not working for my student, and I'm looking for something else, but I don't know what else there is. And so we said, well, why don't we just create an evening where as many of the local choice schools as we can get to a central space can simply just showcase what they do. We set that up, and last year we had about 15 choice schools from the area show up, and these were choice schools all across the spectrum. They were schools like Eric's, which is serving high school students within a more hands-on project-based and also a more small community way. We had schools that are serving specific populations, like Lumen High School, which deals primarily with teen parents from different situations and things like that. So it can be a broad range in terms of the schools that were there. So really, we decided when we put this thing together to cast that as wide as possible. So be any school that parents choice into, essentially. If they say, I chose to go to this school for a particular reason, or I chose to have my students in the school for a particular reason. And so that's really what is there. So in terms of the schools, it's, again, a broad range. This year, we'll have 15 to 20 schools, probably. They'll be there with some materials, and each one will have a table, and they'll just showcase what it is that they do and who it is that they are serving. And then There'll be plenty of time at the event for parents or others to walk around and just ask it. Now you ask who might be there. Last year, there were a couple of different sort of, I don't know, buckets or categories of people who were there, but some were parents who were in this place of looking for something different for their students. And so they were there definitely with a mission to say, like, what else is out there? There were some parents who were in the boat of saying, you know, right now the traditional schools are kind of working for my kids, but I can see as I move into middle school or high school, they might not. So I'm just getting a broader view of what is out there. What's the array of possibilities so that I can dive deeper as the need comes up in terms of that. And then there were a number of folks who were just educators who were out there saying, I just wanted to know more about the choice options out there. What are the other schools out there doing and who is it that they serve? So it's sort of a mix of the participants is a wide range, just like the range of schools is quite wide. You know, there's a lot of different kinds of schools. Choice schools in our region tend to fall into three different buckets. Some are district schools, like, for example, we mentioned Summit in Central Valley, or there's the Public Montessori in District 81. These are standard district schools that are doing things differently. They're not traditional, but they're within the district. Then we have charter schools. There are three charter schools in our region right now. And the charter schools are a different structure for creating a school. And we can talk more about charters if we want to, but the idea being that that's a different kind. And then there are private schools that are doing their thing and serving particular audiences in a private school setting. So we've sort of had these three big buckets. And last time we were here, we had about four or five schools from each of those areas talking about what they did. And again, from very specific kinds of schools serving specific kids, the more general ones serving a wide range of kids, so and families. So it's that idea. And again, the goal really of this is simply to get options on the table, to have people more aware of what are the options. And also, the other goal we have was to make people more aware of why choice schools are important. So at this event coming up, in addition to having this well over an hour of time for parents and others to just talk to people, representatives from various schools, we'll also do a short presentation about what is a choice school and why is it important to the greater educational ecosystem of our region? Why is it important to have choice schools? What do they look like? And probably, we'll have both students and parents talk a little bit about why would somebody choose to go to a choice school, or why would somebody consider a choice school and then decide not to? Because that's also a direction that people go. So to try to give just a wide range of information so that parents and students who are thinking about this would have some context for their decision-making as they move through their educational experience. Charlie, Eric, you want to?
Yeah, I would just like to add that aside from being sort of like almost like a shopping event for parents, a student to wander around and talk in different schools and kind of learn about them. It also is a networking event for the educators at the school too. And you'd think that maybe these educators would be competitive and like fighting against each other to try to steal a student, but actually that isn't at all what it's not the way it feels in the room. So every educator at a choice school is trying to find a way for a kid to be successful. And we know that there are enough students that need that, but there's plenty of students out there that, if anything, it's more a matter of that there are students that just don't know that there are the options available. But these schools aren't trying to steal them from one another. Instead, they're just putting out a different model so that these kids do have ways to try to decide where they're going to fit that. But along the lines of networking between educators too. I know that my school is not a one-stop shop, it's all school. And sometimes I meet with families, and when I hear what their needs are and what that kid is striving for, I actually forward them to one of these other schools that I've learned about. So if they come to me and they're like really deep into wanting to do like engineering type work, I'm like, man, you know what, there's another school in our region that is also a choice school that has this incredible program that way. You might check them out. Like, that might be a better fit for your kid. So So, you know, it's not like we're out there just trying to like get any student in our building. We're trying to get the best student for the kind of program we have to offer. And when we don't have a good fit, we're trying to find another school, we're trying to help these parents find another school where their kids can fit. So I think it's pretty educational to me as a staff member to learn about the other options in the area and know that those are available. And we've also talked with Air about a possibility coming up is to network with these educators to also start to do some professional development together. So sometimes, you know, we go to a conference like Deeper Learning to learn things, but if we have enough schools willing to all chip in together and work together to bring a speaker or, you know, bring an event to Spokane so that we can actually expand the knowledge base here in the city without people having to travel long distances like San Diego to go get new learning. So we've been talking about that upcoming possibility that Air might coordinate.
You know, I'm wondering if we can give some insight to the parents, and Charlie, this might be one for you, but Eric or Mike, feel free to hop in. What are the kind of questions that parents or students should be asking when they're in this space, right? Because some people might not have been able to experience the idea of choice in their education system before, and they might not know what's out there, right? We're used to the standard. We've been calling it big box type schools. So what kind of questions should parents or students come with prepared to ask these schools? Because it's kind of their chance to, in a way, interview people like you, Eric, in your programs to see what is the fit for them.
From our perspective, we were just looking for the attention and the type of learning styles. Eric and Mike have thrown out a couple of them that are, I think, colloquial, but PBL, project-based learning. I think it's just awareness. And so getting educated and trying to learn a little bit about some of these different styles. And again, as Eric mentioned, one might be a little more engineering and tech focused. One may be a little bit more language arts or science based. STEM is a big focus right now, right? So that engineering and technology focus is popular and exciting, but I think there's still traditional or not as progressive needs. Music is something, and arts have been lacking as well, and so we've talked to a number of parents who are saying, hey, are there any other programs that have more art programs or even dance programs that are integrated within some of the curriculum? But I think as a parent, just coming kind of knowing what the propensity of your students are and where your students need to be met with some of those needs is critical. And so having a base understanding of where you think your child is going to be able to fit in better is a huge start.
Yeah, Kenji, thank you, Charlie. I can definitely add on to that. You asked a great question about, well, what kinds of questions should I want to walk in? Well, as we said, our goal is to have 15 or 20 different schools here, all with slightly different missions and different focuses and different programs and different approaches. So really, if a parent or a student walks in and can answer the question, what do I want from my educational experience? That really is helpful. What are the things that I'm actually would hope for? You know, as a parent, what do you hope your kid would say when they come home from school? And what kind of school would generate that kind of response? What kinds of places or environments does my child or does the student who's there learn best in? Can they name the kinds of places where they really are on fire about learning and really engaged? And what are the kinds of places that you're not so engaged? And what do those look like? Because once you do that, I guarantee you that all of these choice schools are going to be talking about, here are the things that we really excel at. You know, Eric talked at the beginning about the fact his school is really focused on creating positive school culture and climate. And what does that look like? Eric can tell you what that looks like. And you decide, is that something that my student really wants or needs, the kind of climate that Eric's talking about? Or are there other kinds of things? Does my child really need a structured learning environment? Do they tend to thrive when there's a lot of structure, or do they tend to thrive when there's less structure? And again, the schools will tell you this is what we do, but having an idea of what you're looking for from an educational experience is really helpful. What are the things I wish for my student And what might those look like? What are the descriptors that I might look at? Eric, do you have something?
Yeah, I also, another good question to ask might be, what are we not going to get at your school? And, you know, I a lot of times talk pretty frankly with families that if their student is, for example, really tied into athletics, students at our school can participate in West Valley High School's athletics, but it does take an extra effort on their part to get over there for the practices and to work around the fact that our schedule is different than their schedule. And that student also then has to have the kind of personality that they can go over and be part of a team and gel with those students without having been at school all day with them. And are they going to be able to be that kind of a dynamic kid to do that? And so, you know, are you going to be able to have, like Charlie mentioned, opportunity for music? Music offered at your school in some way. So, you know, if you have some things your student is passionate about, that would be the kind of thing to go to the choice fair and ask different schools, you know, is this something you offer? Is this something they're going to miss out on? Do they have any opportunity to pursue this in your school? And so sometimes we have students that come here that are passionate about music, but they do it personally and professionally aside from school. They do it through maybe a church or another group. And so if they're doing that already, they don't feel like they have to satisfy that need at school, then that's not a barrier for them. So that might be something to dig into. And I always try to bring students to this event because I want them to actually talk to the students more than me. And if they talk to the students and find out, hey, why do you go to this school? And what do you feel like you're missing at this school? Our students will be very honest and they'll tell you what they love and they'll tell you what they kind of wish they had. And that can be good information for the visitors, parents, kids that come. I would also say, bring your kids. You know, this is not just an adult event. Bring your kid. Give them a chance to come and ask questions and be part of that process.
You know, I wanted to support that whole idea that both Charlie and Eric were putting out there, in that, you know, again, one of the core belief systems that the ARA as an organization shares is that no school is it possible to be all things for all kids, because kids are so different. So that's why, you know, as Eric says, that be clear on what it is that you want and need from a school. And if some of these programs, like Eric said, for music, for example, sometimes choice schools being smaller or more focused on one thing can't offer every single thing, because no school can. So the idea being that, you know, having a good idea of what you really want from your school experience, wherever you are in the spectrum of you know, K-12, what are you looking for? What do you hope for? What do you want? And as Eric said, what are the things that, you know, if you didn't have, would be deal breakers? What would those be? And so that way it helps you sort of, again, then focus on what schools that you're going to be talking to. Our event, just a couple of details. Our choice fair is happening in January 18th. So it's about a month, a little over a month from now. And we're going to be 6 to 8 o'clock in the Hive building, which is out on Sprague. It's the library annex event center building for them. And so we'll be there for a couple hours. And again, as I said, we will start with just a little explanation of what choice schools are and why they're important. And then the rest of the time, we'll just be talking to representatives from schools who are saying, "Here," and they'll all have materials and they'll say, here's what we do. And here's how to find out more about us if you want. So it's free to all participants. If you're hearing this and you think your school might want to participate, please contact AIR or on our website. There's a little flyer that tells you about how to get a booth or a table there. We charge a little bit for schools to present, simply to cover our costs for putting the event on. But for any participant, parents, other educators, students, et cetera, it's free of charge. And we'll do it for a couple hours on the 18th and then hopefully connect you with other or connect the participants with other places that they might dig into even deeper.
Thank you all for going through that. I'm really excited for this event. My background is in college admissions a little bit, and so this reminds me of a college fair of sorts. And just that experience to go and kind of sample from each different school, the different programs that they have, what's available out there, I think is going to be a really meaningful experience and process for a lot of students and families. So I'll just reiterate what you said, Mike. January 18th at the Hive Spokane Public Library building, 6 to 8 p.m. No registration needed for students and families that want to attend. If you're a school looking to be a part of this, reach out to AIR, and we'll make sure that the AIR website is connected to this podcast as well. You know, Mike, we mentioned a few other ways that AIR engages with the community. The learning journeys, film screenings, conversations with the community. How would someone find AIR and engage in those things? Should we just go to the website? Should they call you directly? Or what's the best path for someone like that?
Eric, do you want to field that one?
Well, I just wanted to share on that AIR website, on the homepage, there is a calendar that's running there. There's also a link to the Facebook page where we post all of our events that are coming up.
You can find out about all of that on our website. And there's also contact information about email and phone if you want more details on a particular event or it's not really clear. The Choice Fair, there's a flyer up there that also gives a click for more information and also how to engage with that one. We do have a Eventbrite site that helps register just so we have a rough idea how many people are going to be in the room. But as you said, Kenji, if you just want to show up, that's just fine. But we do need to hear from schools ahead of time so we can make sure you've got a table and everything else you need there when you show up. In addition to that, the other events, as Eric said, we're doing our best to make sure that all of those are updated on our calendar and website. And all of those will have some piece of information about how to get hooked up. For example, the learning journeys that we do. If you want to go on a learning journey, and they'll be on our website. Our next one's happening on the 4th of January. And if you happen to want to go to that one, look up the website where we're going. Just simply email us and say, I'd like to join, and we can make that happen. So those kinds of things are easy. When we do film events, usually there's a Eventbrite. So sign up just so that we know where, how many people are going to be showing up and that kind of thing. But we'll always have flyers for all those events. And so the website really is the best place to keep up with that. But again, if you have questions, email or call us and we can get back to you on that. One other thing I wanted to say about AIR is that we are a 501c3 nonprofit, meaning that we are 100% philanthropy-based organization. And so the cost of putting these things on is paid for mostly by exclusively by donations and perhaps a little bit of grant work here or there. So we're always looking, if you think this is a great idea and want to donate, there's a nice little donate button right on our website that you can do that with, and we will appreciate it. Thanks.
I just want to make mention of the website itself, but it's www.airlearning.org. So I know we'll probably put that in the rest of the podcast, but maybe even superimpose it on top of something. But we've been talking about the website so much, I felt like we should throw it out there.
Thank you for that, Charlie. Is there anything else, Mike, Charlie, Eric, that you want to say about the event or about AIR itself before we wrap up here today?
I'd throw one more, shout out to parents and even the business community. I don't think we can create the educational resources that we need in our community without the advocacy and even the understanding of what's possible. As a parent trying to find the right solutions for my kids, it's amazing how difficult it is to find or even to network and understand what's available. But there are a lot of amazing resources available in our community. And there's a lot of great work being done by teachers that's, I would say, non-traditional. And it just is fantastic to see it and be inspired by people not teaching strictly to a test. My community and our kids could easily have gone to an elementary school where there were 11 K-1 and 2 classes with up to as many as 17 kids per class in the school. And that just, even for myself, felt really overwhelming. And so finding an alternative with even 3 classes of no more than the 17, for a fourth grade class was an important part of our decision. And it just felt like any of our students, but any of our kids could be in a class and they could be recognized by the teachers. They could be heard. They could be, their education could be addressed in a little bit different way. But I guess so, advocacy and awareness is what AIR is about. And I think the more people that get involved in, the education process, I think that's where, the, the parent teacher, the PTA groups are trying to advocate as well. But I think that there is a lot more room for these non-traditional systems to really shine. So I'll hand it over to Eric.
Yeah, if I could add one final plug, I would just say, Kent, you mentioned like being able to play that high school game well. And I sort of did the same thing, just kind of made it through high school. I don't know that I got even 10% of what I could have learned in that setting. And I think about, you know, there's kids that their high school experience is all about how can I get a certain number of points to get a certain grade. And if we could shift that, if they're like, man, I can't wait to get to school to learn about this, or I'm working with this team on this project that's going to have this thing done, that's going to have this impact in our world. Those are the kinds of things kids are talking about and doing. And then they're excited to go to school, and it's not like you're dragging them out of bed to get them to school in the morning. Then that's the kind of work that I want to do. So I think AIR is always trying to find places that are causing that kind of thing to happen.
And Mike, to sort of play off of what both Charlie and Eric said, is that the bright side of all this is that there are so many more options today than there ever were before. You know, I remember when I first came to Spokane 30 years ago, I think there were four or five schools that were called alternative schools, and they might have been doing things differently, but that was pretty much it, you know, and I can only name one or two that I can remember. Now, you know, the list of schools we invited just to our choice fair is about 35. So there are a great number of schools serving a wider range of students. And the challenge now is just to get the information out there so that parents and students can be aware of what are my choices. And that's the point of the choice fair.
Mike, Charlie, Eric, thank you so much for being here and talking to us about the choice fair. I'm just going to say it one more time. It's on January 18th at the Hive. From 6 to 8 p.m. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to learn more about League of Education Voters or support our work, please visit our website, educationvoters.org.